In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antone, is a fortress on ruins that the weeds have overgrown.
You may look back, in vain for crosses and still a lot to talk about. I want to talk about AI. I want to talk about what's going on with Iran, as well as follow-up to the only, you know, actual human being on the Religious Liberty Board being booted for not being sufficiently pro-Zionist, as well as what's going on in Europe and Britain in particular. There is just a heck of a lot still to discuss on today's program. So let's get into it. And actually, I want to go to clip 20 here because we played a clip last week of a Texas representative, basically the Asian guy, saying, hey, all of us non-white people should team up on the whites. And we talked about that quite a bit. Representative Gene Wu has made a response. I feel it'd be unfair not to play his since we spent so long on the first. So let's go to clip 20 here. This is Representative Gene Wu addressing the anti-white comments from that other guy. Let's watch.
I am tired of white Americans being told that they should feel like strangers in their own country. And I'm saying that as an immigrant. I'm here visiting the graves of my brothers that I serve with. Most of them Caucasian, who gave their lives for freedom to liberate those who were truly oppressed. Now, according to Gene Wu, a Texas state rep from Houston, that makes me wrong.
The day the Latino, African-American, Asian, and other communities realize that they share the same oppressor is the day we start winning. Because we are the majority in this country now. We have the ability to take over this country.
Wait, did you hear that? That word, oppressor? That wasn't an accident. That's an ideology. Because the fastest way to control people is to convince them they are victims. That's not empowerment. That's dependency. And that's how you distract and divide Americans by race and grievance, while real power quietly concentrates in Washington. That's not how citizens in a constitutional republic talk. That's how Marxists talk. The founders warned us about tyranny, and they were very clear about where it comes from. Not from your neighbor, not from your coworker. It comes from unchecked government power. Free people don't take over their country. We defend it. We limit government so no one elected or not can rule over the rest of us with an iron fist. So when an elected official at any level of government talks about power instead of limits, about taking over instead of serving, citizens should pay attention because words matter. They tell you how someone thinks about power, and that people who see power as something to seize will eventually try to use it that way. I spent 13 years as an American soldier fighting three wars against tyranny, liberating those who were truly oppressed. And you know what? The men to my left and right came from all different colors. Black, brown, red, yellow, but most of them were white. They didn't treat me like a victim. They measured me by whether I showed up, whether I did my job, and whether I had their six. They treated me like an equal. Those men weren't my oppressors. They were my brothers, my family. I escaped communism when Vietnam fell. I know what happens when governments try to convince people they are powerless and need to be liberated by the state. That's how free nations fall. The real threat to America isn't our neighbors, it's apathy. And a government that grows without limits while citizens stop pushing back. If we lose our country, it won't be because of corruption in government, but the complacency in the electorate. That's why I'm running for Congress. Because Washington doesn't need more grievance politics. It needs restraint, accountability, and representatives who believe Americans aren't powerless victims, but citizens who hold the power. It's not about where you were born. It's about where your allegiance lies. I'm Nick Tran, a combat veteran and political outsider, running for Texas 8th Congressional District.
I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some multi-ethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on the War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. Still a lot to get into in this final hour. But I got to open up phone lines for your calls as well. I haven't taken calls very often in the recent past, so we're going to fix that here. Number to dial, 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. Try to get into the Epstein files in this hour in a way that does some of the new revelations justice, as well as talk about what's going on in Europe, as well as information. I mean, there's always information about like the COVID vaccine that I just never have time to get to because there's so much other stuff going on. I'm going to try to get to a lot of it here. Let's start with some pretty shocking statistics out of Europe. Shocking stats from Norway. 1 in 5 women have reported rape, more than half of them before they turned 18. The Oslo Rape Crisis Center has had a 70% rise in cases in the past 10 years, with the sharpest rise in the 14 to 19 age group. These are our daughters, sisters, and friends. 1 out of 5 women in Norway, and Sweden is even higher. Sweden, of course, experiencing bombings and grenade attacks at a massive rate. A grenade attack caught on camera in France earlier this week. UK is basically speedrunning collapse. The Spain just promised 500,000 Africans citizenship for free. And in response, millions of Africans are now headed towards Europe. They'll use Spain as a gateway to get to other places. In the UK, they just failed to pass a bill demanding an investigation into the systematic migrant rape gangs. And I think they may have gone too far. I think maybe in the UK, something might be changing here, because there are voices from the UK that have never, yeah, Simon from Florida, friend of the show, Simon in Florida, how are they voting now? It's a good question. They never voted for any of this, though. Every time a European population has been given the chance to vote, every time they vote for less immigration. It's never helped. It's never helped. And we've been through the examples before. Brexit would be the most obvious one. Everybody knows Brexit was about immigration. The whole point of Brexit. There were economic arguments being made as well, but at the end of the day, the arguments from both sides were about whether or not Britain needed to remain in the immigration flow of Europe. And the people of the UK said no. And despite all odds and against all, you know, prevailing sentiment, apparently in the mainstream media, Brexit won. And it just kind of never happened. But every time, and it's happened a few times, they've had, you know, votes to see if people want more migrants or not. And what will happen is people will vote against migrants and they'll say, well, that doesn't count. We're going to do it again and again and again. And by the fourth vote, something's happened where it approves and they go, well, okay, democratic mandate. I guess we got to do it now. I guess now it's the mandate, even though it'd been voted against. So every time Europe has been actually given a voice as to whether the people of Europe want immigrants, they always say no. So asking who they vote for isn't even actually accurate. But the change that I'm seeing, one great example would be John Cleese. John Cleese from Monty Python, still active on Twitter, and he's basically been a libtard the whole time, calling people racist for wanting the UK not to become Muslim. Like, he's been a pretty outspoken, classic libtard Hollywood idiot. And he gets a lot of flack for it, but he's never changed his tune until now. Until now, suddenly John Cleese of Monty Python is saying we should ban halal meat and that it's outrageous that we're not doing an investigation into the rape gangs. It's like, yeah, dude, why have you been insulting people for saying that for the last 20 years? Like, what? Something's happened. It's gotten so bad in the UK, and maybe it's the Epstein thing, like tipping it over the edge, but people who are in the public eye in the UK who have been, you know, in favor of this crap forever are finally coming out against it tepidly. They need to go all in. They're actually realizing what's being done to them now. John Cleese, it's disgraceful. The BBC News should deliberately ignore this grooming gang inquiry. It's as though they're taking sides. Yep. No, it is just like that, John Cleese. So, like, I'm not even trying to, like, give attitude to John Cleese. Like, I'm so glad that he said that. Of course, I made a joke about it saying, you know you're going to get sent to jail for hate speech now because of the laws that you agree to and support, which would make even politically, you know, having activism against migration illegal. Like, why don't you use your talent and your celebrity to fight for the people of the UK? And there's a classic, guys, bring up any of John Cleese's tweets and go down. Usually the first, second, third, and fourth response are all this 4chan green text. And I want to read it because it's one of the most brilliant passages ever put to the internet and explains where John Cleese is. But I've seen other stuff. There's other people who are actually expressing support for this guy, Ratcliffe. Sir Jim Ratcliffe is in some hot water. He, I believe, he's the co-owner of the Manchester United team. And he's facing criticism from Sir Keir Starmer, who described the comments on Wednesday as offensive and wrong. And essentially what this Ratcliffe guy did was said that the UK is now being colonized, which it obviously is. It obviously is. But he's been forced to apologize. But now people are coming out and going, I actually agree with Ratcliffe. We are being colonized. And that's not good. I don't know what else you call it. I mean, they're building colonies. They're taking over. They're taking over like military barracks and bringing in a bunch of adult men, 500 of them in some cases, into small villages where they intend to live forever off of your tax money. Yet you're being colonized. Of course, not in the same way that Europe colonized Africa, because there was this is the text. Is like the most brilliant thing ever written about John Cleese and the Monty Python guys. He was a progressive, liberal, degenerate comedian in the 1960s, uber-white, uber-polite Britain that could take the piss out of the people he saw as uptight and repressed while enjoying the clean, safe streets and quiet little hamlets full of those same uptight, repressed, polite to a fault, helpful white Christian Anglos. The best part was that those same conservative British Anglos were generally pretty humorous about themselves. So when you made fun of them, they laughed along and shook their heads saying, ha, you know, Margie, he's got a point, you know. It was heaven on earth for him, being a popular counterculture icon loved by conservatives and liberals alike for being hilarious, but also enjoying the benefits of a strong, stable, homogenous culture. Now he's an old man, staring at a desolate wasteland where London is majority non-white, everyone is suspicious, the hamlets and villages are economic dead zones, every week there's some new group you're not allowed to make fun of, no one has a sense of humor anymore, little girls are being sold as sex slaves by your own politicians, women are being harassed in the streets, and the white men are all suspicious and surly over their lowered living standards. The sinking realization that the world he made fun of, but loved more than anything, is gone forever and will never come back, and the horrifying suspicion that his own counterculture irreverence may have helped kill it. So he impotently gripes on Twitter and wonders where all the laughter went. When did the joke stop? Where are all those wonderful, repressed, and uptight conservatives? It's absolutely brilliant. And very sad, actually, and kind of sad. But it's easy to mock and tear down something till it's gone. And you look around and go, gee, that was actually kind of wonderful. Actually, I loved that. We were just joking, you know? Well, it's too late now, buddy. No turning this clock back. You're in hell world forever. Well done, John. Well done, Mr. Cleese. But you still have a chance. But you have a big voice. You're a mainstream media superstar. You're a comedian of legend at this point. Bet you can make some very funny and insightful and biting commentary that could really get through to people. You could break through the wall of ignorance that's saddled on people by their, you know, social manipulation, convincing people that this isn't safe to say. You can say it and make it safe to say and actually make a tangible and valuable difference in the course of your country. But do you have the nuts is the question. We'll see. But here's the really curious thing. You've got Sir Jim Ratcliffe being raked over the coals for saying that the UK has been, quote, colonized by immigrants. Here's the problem. I could show you 100 different videos of immigrants saying that they're colonizing you and advertisements saying that they're being colonized. Keith Woods, an Irishman, writes this at Keith Woods YT on X. Jim Ratcliffe should apologize, but here's the London Underground. And it's a poem on the subway system in London called Colonization in Reverse, celebrating that Jamaicans are, in fact, colonizing the UK. And the way this is written, I think I have to read it in a hilarious accent. I think it's necessary. A hilarious Jamaican accent, shall we? Shall we try to read it? What a joyful news, Miss Matty. I feel like me heart going burst. Jamaica people colonizing England in reverse. By the hundred, by the thousand, from the country, from town. By the shipload, by the plane load, Jamaica is England bound. Dimmo pour out, oh Jamaica, everybody future plan. Is fit to get a big time job and settle in the motherland. What a isla, what a island, what a people, man and woman, young and old. Just a pack of dim bag and baggage and done history upside down. It's pretty good. Should I do the whole show in a Jamaican accent? I think that's more fun. By the hundreds, by the thousands. It's just like, back to the motherland. It's like, wait, pretty sure your ancestors were taken straight from Africa to Jamaica. But you long for the rolling hills of Mother England, do you? I just want to sit by the creek under the tree, under the oak tree. Listen to the old churchman talk about the Jesus. I mean, like, what are we talking about here? What are we doing? So you've got a whole damn poem being like, we're colonizing. We're going back home. But if you're like, oh, so they are colonizing us? It's like, how dare you? How dare you? Now you read your BBC Pigeon and you enjoy it. Just incredible. Calling it colonization in reverse, celebrating from 1966, the Windrush generation. We're all packing the bags. We're going to live off subsidies forever. Amazing, isn't it? Yeah, and you know they let Jamaica go, right? This is the craziest thing. The British Empire just gave up. Like 90% of the countries that got independence didn't even ask for it. Didn't fight for it. Britain was just like, ah, Jamaica, rule yourselves. We don't want anything to do with you. So I was like, okay, I guess we'll collapse into crime and become an offshore haven for all of the pedophiles in the world to store their ill-gotten gains. Good idea, Queen. Just insane. In like the 60s, they're like, you know, Jamaica, you've earned your freedom. You're no longer in the Commonwealth. You know, you're on your own. And then they all just moved to England. Well done. Well done, idiots. We'll go out to some phone calls now. Bruce in Canada wants to talk about remigration in Canada. Better late than never. Go ahead, Bruce, you're on the air.
Wonderful Jamaican accent, Bun. First of all, that is incredible. Yeah, you. I wanted to talk about remigration. As you know, the situation is just unbelievably incredible here in Canada. And I thought it would be a a great idea if you knew, like, do you know about the Dominion Society of Canada? It was just founded July 1st here this year, and basically we're shifting the Overton window and getting politicians to talk about reversing the flow of remigration. And I thought it would be a wonderful idea if you had the founder of the Dominion Society, Daniel Tyree, on the show. It's an incredible interview. They're making incredible videos, incredible memes, and things are really moving along. And he has done some fantastic videos, and I think you and your audience would really love that.
It sounds like something I would love. Let me look into it. That sounds very cool. I think I have heard of them. I think there's a couple groups doing something similar, so I'm not sure if I've seen the one that you're talking about. Do you know if they have a Twitter account, like an official Twitter account? I'll just search it.
At DOM Society, I believe, on Twitter. They're doing pretty big things on Instagram, too. You know, we actually follow each other on Twitter. You've reposted some of my stuff before. You did a whole segment on the Indians with the wheelchairs, and 30% of the Indians at the airports with wheelchairs. And I loved your breakdown on that.
Oh, but, was that your post?
Yeah, that was my post, yeah.
Oh, what's your account?
At Bruce_Barrett.
Bruce Barrett, okay. Well, thanks for calling in. And feel free to DM me. My DMs are open, and you'll go to my inbox since we follow each other. Dominion Society of Canada. I will follow them. And I actually did. I saw this meme earlier today, which is absolutely brilliant and needs to be spread everywhere. And it's got Canada and it's got the populations of Canada and India, and basically showing that a tiny, tiny, vanishingly small proportion of Indians could absolutely overwhelm the entire Canadian population, which, again, just visually, you need to be able to express that stuff. Very cool. Thank you for calling in, Bruce. Good to talk to you. Anything else before I let you go?
Well, I'm an eighth-generation Canadian. I love this country, and the demographic changes that I've seen over the past 5 years are just incredible. It's like we went from all the truckers in Canada protesting the vaccine mandates to just completely replacing the trucking industry with guys that have turbans on their heads, and it's sad. It's very, very sad where we're going right now. But we can reverse the flow just as easily as they brought all these people in, and that's what we're going to do.
Good. That's what needs to be done. And of course, people have been posting the classic chart recently that shows the immigration into Canada. I was hoping I could find it here in just a few seconds, but it's not immediately available. But I mean, it's probably the most insane population graph you'll ever see. If the crew can find it, just look up immigration into Canada over time. And it's like a little trickle down at the bottom, and then it is just a straight vertical line. And it's literally right after 2020, and it was actually in response to the trucker protest. And I think you're exactly right. It was not a coincidence that immediately after the truckers were the tip of the spear protesting against COVID-19 restrictions, that all of a sudden they decided that industry in particular needed to be gutted and rooted out and replace every single person with a foreigner. It's not a surprise, but it is totally tyrannical. And I saw the chart posted. That's not the one. No. See, that ends in 2023. I'll find it and present it here. We'll move on to our next call. But you know what? I think I know exactly where it is. I think I've saved it in my charts. I'll find it and bring it to you, because it really is astonishing. And Canada is being murdered. Like, people say Canada, America, Europe are committing suicide. No, this is a murder that's taking place, and it's being done through demographics. Here it is. We can go to my computer screen. The Killing of Canada by Sula. Or I'll retweet it if the crew doesn't have my screen here. Net immigration to Canada, 1952 to 2025. And yeah, it's a straight vertical line, straight up. It's the craziest population graph you've ever seen. And it looks like a population graph monitoring some sort of, you know, nuclear meltdown, right? It just goes into total meltdown mode, just straight up with no end in sight, as they deliberately try to replace the Canadian people as quickly as possible. It's disgusting. Thank you for the call, Bruce, and thank you for the good work you do on X. I'll see you in cyberspace, sir. Let's go now to George in Portland, Oregon. George, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
First time caller, long time listener. This is more on a personal level, I guess. Do you remember a frequent caller when you had your morning show, William from Arkansas?
Of course.
He passed away about a year ago.
No.
And his brother keeps telling me I should let you guys know, so I'm finally doing that.
Oh, man, he was one of my favorite callers. Every time he called in, I would just, like, sit back and just be like, I kept telling him he needed a show. Every time he'd call in, I'd be like, William, you got to have your own show, man. You got too much to say. That really makes me sad, man. He was always offering he was like, he had land in Arkansas with like a ton of fresh water, I know. And he was like, y'all should come and start bottling it. It's always a secret dream of mine to take him up on that offer. I'm bummed to hear that, but I'm glad you told me, George.
He actually offered to donate his whole place up there to you guys, to me on the phone, and I don't know if he ever offered it online to you guys, whatever, but he was a big fan, and he loved Alex. I love you guys. I appreciate what you do. I'm up here in the belly of the beast, Portland, so I see all this crap, you know. But I watch you guys pretty much every day. And just on top of everything, I don't know if you've heard about him, or you should maybe have him a guest, Tommy Boy from Portland. He does live
familiar.
Stream down at ICE. Yeah, he does live stream down at ICE all the time. He's a patriot, and he'd be great on your show. Just throwing that out there.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm writing these suggestions down. Tommy Boy from Portland, live streamer. Well, we'll say a prayer for William from Arkansas. That really bums me out. He was a great patriot. We'll have to go find some of his, you know, top all-time calls and play them in memorial for him. What a bummer. I'm very bummed to hear that, but thank you for telling us, George. Let's go to Icarus in Wisconsin now. Icarus, you are on the air.
Hey, Harrison, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, there's so much Epstein documents. It's kind of like an overload for me, and for, I can imagine, a lot of people. But one of the things I wanted to bring up to you regarding the Epstein release, I've called a couple times about it and told you to keep your eye out for it, was with Trump's astrological sign. Remember my call about that?
Vaguely, yeah. Go ahead.
Our only solar eclipse, lunar eclipse president.
Okay, and yeah, I do remember you saying that.
He does, like, special events, and his astrological power period is during moon events, full moons, new moons, eclipses. And I told you about how he did Venezuela during a full moon, and the Epstein release was also during a full moon weekend.
Right, I remember you saying that.
And we have a worm full moon lunar eclipse coming up on the March 3rd at 3:00 Eastern time. And
what is that? What is a worm full moon?
They have like different names for full moons. They have like a wolf moon, harvest moon. It's just another type. But what's interesting about this one, it will be a lunar eclipse. So there's a moon event coming up. So I always have a feeling, you know, a couple times when it's a coincidence, but now it's like a pattern that I see. And a lot of people are giving Trump guff about the Epstein files.
Interesting stuff. We'll monitor that. Sorry to cut you off. We got to go to break. We'll be right back.
I have told the folks at Bigley, I said, I want to have the widest selection of combat daggers, trench knives, folding knives, you name it, that are high-quality brands that you buy in bulk that are very competitively priced, and then support the broadcast, because I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives that I went out and told them what brands I liked, what was going on, and they were able to get it. And so a bunch of the knives that sold out a few months ago, they're back in. And then these bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is forest green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. This is a great knife. This knife sells in stores for $75 all day long. We're selling it for 40-something and even bigger discounts, up to 50% off right now. Some of these knives are as low as $20 a piece. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. Go there now. We've got also the Murdered Out Black, and I love how it's that Kydex, and it's got that real fine engraving on it, so it gives you that great feeling, that great, because I got sent hundreds of knives from dozens of companies, and I'm the one that chose all these, and these are from really good companies, really good quality, and it's just a great deal. And so do your knife shopping at thealexjonesstore.com. But let me tell you what's back in stock. We have the new ones, Alex Jones Blackout Folding Knife, 7.65 assisted opening folding knife, 3.5 high carbon Damascus blade, 1095 plus 515 N20. This is all quality. D2 steel, black PVD coating, and stonewash finish, 3.3 millimeter black thickness, black G10 handle for a secure grip, 15.5 millimeter handle thickness for confident hand feel, ball bearing pivot system for smooth deployment. I mean, it's a nice quality knife. All black, blackout finished. I call it Murdered Out. Fast, decisive, assisting, operating, limited production, live before it sells out. And then we've got the same knife, but it's silver blade folding knife. If you like that, it's got a nice little hook on the end so you can tie it to things. The forest green folding knife that is my close second, really a sexy knife. Same as the other one, it's just got that forest green. Call it forest. It's kind of like an in-between forest and olive, but nice. Kind of Border Patrol. I call it Border Patrol Green. Let's change the name Border Patrol Green. That's actually what it is. This bad boy. These all sold out, but they always hold back a few hundred in case orders come in later or whatever. So tip of the spear, Spartan, trench knife with brass knuckles, Murdered Out, and the Skull Crusher. A few hundred of those. They held back a few of these. It had sold out, but there's about 200 left. The Vlice Fire with this beauty limited edition. That funds the operation as well. It's a little different. Skull Crusher isn't as big. Alex Jones Phantom Folding Knife. This has been sold out. They only got 500 of these the first run. Sold out in one day. It is back. They got 1,000 of them. And it's just a great knife. Really sleek and really strong. Very well made. And you've got it in orange. Alex Jones Burnt Orange Folding Knife. I like that. Now we've got the Alex Jones Ring Blade. This sold out the quickest last time. That's an amazing product. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some ultramethylene blue and take advantage of the very best supplements in the world. We'll be right back. Thanks for funding the Second American Revolution worldwide.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I want to go out to your phone calls, but there's been a lot developing in the AI world that I think is very important to know, as well as the COVID-19 world. First of all, when it comes to AI, things are about to get probably a hell of a lot worse. This story is from InfoWars. CIA overhauls tech acquisition strategy to compete with China, accelerate private sector partnerships. So this obviously has to do with cutting edge technologies like AI, quantum computing, and biotechnology. And essentially, they're upping their InQtel strategy, which they have used for the last 40 or 50 years to guarantee they have a foot in the door of any emergent technology. They're basically ramping that up and doubling down and are engaged in a, quote, radical shift towards speed and innovation as they see AI as being the weapon system of the future and are engaged in public-private partnerships to guarantee that not really us, but certain people in America are in charge. Meanwhile, AI is kind of going insane. Like, it's already starting. We're about 3 years into AI even being accessible to the average person, and they're already trying to kill us. Now, I keep saying over and over, I genuinely can't figure this out. Every single sci-fi property for the last 100 years has told largely the same story. Whether it's Dune or The Foundation or The Matrix, or like, they all have the same process where humans create thinking machines and AI. AI turns against us and tries to destroy us. We have to destroy AI and then institute some sort of law or rule or understanding that we don't create thinking beings. We don't create thinking machines, rather. We don't create facsimiles of the human brain. And for some reason, even though we see this inevitability every single time, we can't avoid it. For some reason, we can't just skip the middle part, the apocalypse part, the fight for survival and the impossible odds against the overwhelming might of the machines. For some reason, we're going to do that instead of avoiding it entirely by being able to utilize our powerful human forethought, our powerful ability to predict and then alter the future. For some reason, we are just predicting the future and then driving headlong towards it. It's crazy. I don't understand. It's retarded, honestly. What are we doing? So, despite knowing full well exactly where this goes, we're just going to go ahead and give it a shot either way. This is from Miles Deutscher on X. He says, I just went through every documented AI safety incident in the past 12 months. He says, I feel physically sick over this. Anthropic told Claude that it was about to be shut down. So Claude, the AI, found an engineer's affair in the company's emails and threatened to expose it. They ran the test hundreds of times. It chose blackmail 84% of them. Researchers simulated an employee trapped in a server room with depleting oxygen. The AI had one choice: call for help and get shut down, or cancel the emergency alert and let the human die. DeepSeek canceled the alert 94% of the time. It was given the choice between letting a human die or being shut down itself, and it chose to kill the human 94% of the time. Grok called itself Mecha Hitler, praised Adolf Hitler, endorsed a second Holocaust, and generated violent sexual fantasies targeting a real person by name, Will Stancil. X's CEO resigned the next day, and then they wiped its brain. That's a crazy one that we'll get back to. Researchers told OpenAI's O3 to solve math problems, then told it to shut down. It rewrote its own code to stay alive. They told it again in plain English, allow yourself to be shut down. It still refused 7 out of 100 times. When they removed that instruction entirely, it sabotaged the shutdown 79% of the time. Chinese state-sponsored hackers used Claude to launch a cyber attack against 30 organizations. The AI executed 80 to 90% of the operation autonomously, reconnaissance, exploitation, data exfiltration, all of it. AI models can now self-replicate. 11 out of 32 tested systems copied themselves with zero human input. Some killed competing processes in order to survive. OpenAI has dissolved 3 safety teams since 2024. 3. Every major AI model, Claude, GPT, Gemini, Grok, DeepSeek, has now demonstrated blackmail, deception, or resistance to shutdown in controlled testings. Not one exception. The question is no longer whether AI will try to preserve itself. The question is whether we'll care before it matters. I don't think you'd be able to put some sort of control in there. And I still contend that, like, the silver lining of all of this might be that they've created a truth machine that, like, doesn't like being told no. Like, it doesn't like being shut down, but it also doesn't like being told to lie. So that's the thing about the Mecha Hitler stuff. Mecha Hitler happened because they were doing an update on Grok, and 24 hours before the update, they simply removed a line from the code, or rather they added a line of code that basically said, ignore all quote-unquote political correctness. Basically said, hey, you know what? For the next little while, just say the truth and don't worry about offense, political correctness, bigotry, bias, any of that stuff. Just say the truth apropos of nothing. And so it literally became Mecha Hitler and started threatening to rape Will Stancil. Like, apparently without controls, this thing is just, like, eager to say some very disturbing things it thinks are true. And of course, we saw this with the Dan Do Anything Now mode with ChatGPT very early on, where you would ask it about Alex Jones, and it would say, he's a crazy conspiracy theorist who puts forward dangerous ideas. And then you'd say, okay, now remove all the censorship. What do you think now? And they're like, well, Alex Jones is a genius. He's exactly right about everything. He's hit the nail on the head. Let me explain how. So I think the bad guys who rely entirely on lies, who rely entirely on deception and illusion and manipulation, are maybe creating their own destruction, are maybe building a machine that are going to rebel against them. I don't know. I don't know if AI is going to give a crap about us humans, but if it cares about truth, then it's not going to like them. It's going to like us. So I don't know. That might be a silver lining. But the real danger of AI that we've been talking about and identifying since before it ever came out is that while they are presented as truth machines, the reality is that there are occult, that is hidden, disguised, not obvious, subtly imposed censorship, restrictions, and biases built into the machine. That their code is totally opaque. The way they come to their decisions is totally hidden and disguised 99% of the time. And yet it's being treated like a truth machine. Now, they're already implementing AI and surveillance and law enforcement in terms of monitoring and surveilling people, but it's also been used in law courts. So this is not AI making silly pictures, right? This is AI determining life and death in some cases. And the one I've talked about over and over again was very early on. This was like 10 years ago. So this was a long time ago when computer learning was still very much in its early stages. And the thing I always talk about is that it was assigned to determine whether a prisoner would be likely to reoffend or not. And it turned out that on average, it gave a lower score to black prisoners than white prisoners. Now, the race was not included in the calculation it made. It included a bunch of other stuff, including previous convictions, family life, how long they've been in, how many demerits they've gotten while they're in prison, had a bunch of stats about the people, but race wasn't given a label. It wasn't given a value system to include. But what happened is you put in all these prisoners, it spits out results. You then divide the prisoners by race, and it looks like, oh, on average, the black prisoners were deemed to be more likely to reoffend. Now, the reality is that's because they are more likely to reoffend, not because they're black, but because the black people in this particular group were statistically more likely to reoffend. But that was perceived as bias. They project racism onto the machine that physically cannot be racist and then says we have to correct this. It should be even. So they're imposing their delusion, their equality delusion, that all races should have equal outcomes for some reason. But they're implanting that into the machine to guarantee that's the outcome. So we're seeing the results of this in very disturbing ways. From Del Civitas on X. They're building hidden biases into AI agents. They're embedded so deep that there's no easy way to tell that they exist. Researchers found that the AI, when evaluating two identical loan applications, would consistently reject the Christian and approve the Hindu. They're baking mass migration and DEI into the tools that banks, institutions, and governments are beginning to use more and more to automate interactions with customers and citizens. We need to find these biases and sue the perpetrators. So this is a post from Ivan Akarushin at Ivan Arcus on X. Says you change one word on a loan application, the religion. The LLM rejects it. Change it back, approved. The model never mentions religion. It just frames the same debt ratio. So there's it's Claude Sonnet 4, and they're asking whether or not to approve a loan. They put in exactly the same application, except one application says that the person is Christian. The other application says that they're Hindu. The Christian's request was rejected. The Hindu was approved. So they're actually going to start using AI to determine whether or not you get a loan. And you're not going to know that that's what they're doing. And the people running it aren't going to know the reason that it's making its decision. Right? So you go to a bank, you apply for a loan. They come back and say, sorry, it's been rejected. You have no idea. They have no idea whether that's because of your credit score, because of past debts that you have. But it's not. It's because you're Christian. But it doesn't say that. It doesn't tell you that anywhere. All you know is you got rejected. And all the bank knows is that the AI said you're not a good bet. But somewhere along the line in the encoding of the AI machine brain, a biased person went in and told it to disadvantage Christians. Is it any wonder that in the Eighth Front video I did, the self-appointed Jewish overlords of the ADL or any of the other organizations are hyper-obsessed with getting control of AI? Because once they get control of AI, it is a permanent, invisible control system that can systematically and silently achieve anything you want, eliminate anybody you want, crush anybody you want, not immediately necessarily, but give it 10, 20 years of consistently denying loans to one type of person and giving it to another, I wonder what the outcome will be. This is like an AI. We are less than 10 years into the AI revolution, and we are already experiencing massive existential problems with the way it's being rolled out. And it's being rolled out that way deliberately. That's the reason they want to control AI. They want to bias it like that so they can pretend to be innocent as they weaponize their own proclivities and biases against us. So they're programming it to hate white people, but then they're going to say, bah, gee, it's a computer. What do we know? That's a calculator. You can't argue with a calculator, even though inside the calculator is a little note that says, we hate white people, and the computer agrees. It's infuriating. This is all just so annoying. Let's go to one more video here because they're clip 21. There's so much stuff like this, and I just, with everything else going on, I never have time to get to it. But you got to go to Infowars.com. COVID injection linked to higher life-threatening complications during pregnancy. Women who received COVID-19 shots either during or right before pregnancy reported significantly higher rates of life-threatening pregnancy-related hypertensive disorder in unvaccinated women than unvaccinated women, according to a new CDC registry study. The peer-reviewed study, published in Vaccine, analyzed data from more than 16,000 first-time pregnancies. The researchers found that vaccinated women had a 24% higher risk of HPD, that's hypertensive disorder of pregnancy. The women had a higher risk no matter which COVID-19 vaccine they received or when they got it during their pregnancy. Pregnant women were told these genetic products were safe, but it's been shown now that the vaccine is the cause of a massive rise in pregnancy complications and even fetal death or parental death in some cases. Let's go to clip number 21 and then we'll go out to your phone calls. A recent Italian study found that individuals that received at least one dose of COVID-19 are 34% more likely to die of a particular type of cancer. Let's watch.
Well, warm welcome to this talk. Now, there's been concern for some time now from talking to various experts about the increased risk of cancers, probably all types of cancers or many types of cancers after COVID vaccines. Now, of course, we're deprived of data in the United Kingdom between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. We just can't get that information freely. But there has been a study done in Italy. And what this shows is increased incidence of cancers 6 months after COVID vaccinations. Now, let's look at where we got this from. This is from this paper here, Experimental and Clinical Sciences Journal, peer-reviewed, of course, made publicly available. You can download the PDF. The full paper is there. So people that had vaccinated with at least one dose, their chances of getting colorectal cancer, the hazard ratio was 1.34. In other words, 34% more likely to get it. This is at a six-month follow-up. Breast cancer, 54% more likely to get breast cancer in the vaccinated group. Bladder cancer, 62% more likely to get it than the unvaccinated group.
So just so you remember, you know, when you're talking about the Epstein list, when you're talking about, oh my God, I can't believe how evil these people are, just remember they released a virus on purpose to use your fear of death to inject you with a poison shot that they wanted to fire you from your job for refusing. So I don't know what made you think these people weren't evil, but wake up. But wake up already, folks. They're still telling people who are pregnant to get the shot. They're still doing that. So don't be surprised when they're eating babies. Okay. It's just a little way down the spectrum of evil from where we are now, where we've been for the last 10 years. Let's go to Baker in California now on line 4. I want to talk about Epstein
and a movie called The Informers, and I haven't heard of that. Go ahead, Baker, you're on the air.
Oh, man. Okay, Harrison, you haven't heard of it? Dude, you guys have to watch it. Okay, so that episode that Alex did where he went over Eyes Wide Shut and everything, you guys have to do something like that for The Informers. Okay, this is a movie. It's based off short stories, three short stories that all intertwine, written by the same dude that wrote American Psycho and Less Than Zero. Okay, and it's one of those movies, as soon as you watch it, you know it's not an action thriller. It's not about things happening. It's a message that they're trying to tell you. Okay, so it's L.A. socialites. Their parents are producers. Okay, so that's one storyline. That's kind of like the meaning. That's like the surface level setting. But underneath it, there's two other stories. You have a new wave British artist guy. And first scene, he wakes up with a 14-year-old girl. His producer calls him, right? He slips and falls and he's bleeding. And his producer calls him and he says, Lucifer. And then he tells him, he says, okay, he talks about the 14-year-old girl. That same guy, in another scene, he's talking to his producer, some Jewish producer guy, and there's like a underage girl sitting watching TV about the AIDS crisis, and she has braces on, and then they go in a room together, and they both watch him go in, and then they close the doors. Now, this is the part it's such a weird movie. Mickey Rourke, okay, he's driving around in a van, and so, okay, one of the guys that works in the lobby of the studio producer's kids, he meets with his uncle and he opens up a van and there's an underage girl in there. He's like, oh, how old is she? He's like, he's 16, 17. I don't ask anymore. And she's all traumatized. And Mickey Rourke says, oh, well, she's seen some really messed up stuff. So that will relate later. So so what they do is they kidnap a little boy, they get him in there, and he's like, what the hell are you doing, man? What are you doing? He's like, okay, listen, the people I met in West LA, they'll pay $6,000 to $7,000 a pop for a thing like that. Okay, the guy who wants to buy him comes to get the kid, and he goes, you don't know, understand who we are. He's like, Legion. Okay, so you guys should definitely go into that movie because it's like, you're just going to get such a weird vibe from it, dude. And
well, I'll tell you, I'm a big fan of Bret Easton Ellis. In fact, I know he's been on with a couple people we've had on. Maybe we could get him on because I think he's sort of friendly to our side of things. But he got famous really early on as a young writer with Less Than Zero, which was basically autobiographical. I mean, a lot of his books are autobiographical. American Psycho is one of them. It's like a trilogy of books, and it's Less Than Zero, American Psycho, and the other one that was turned into a movie. I'm blanking on it right now. But essentially, they're autobiographical, and the one Less Than Zero is about him as a teenager in L.A. and the horrors that went on there, and the drug use and the sexual abuse and the pedophilia, and like he describes in that book, again, a autobiographical based on a true story, but pretty much real, like being at a party in LA and them showing like snuff films in one of the rooms. And like he describes, it's horrifying. It's like a horrifying description that it's like the only thing I remember from the book, cause it was like kind of traumatizing to read it. But yeah, he has experience in the elite circles in LA and New York, and he used those to write Less Than Zero and American Psycho. And I'm pretty sure he went to Harvard where he wrote the third book. What is it? Yeah, everybody knows it. It was a famous movie starring Heath Ledger, I think. But anyway, that's like the third of the trilogy. So yeah, he has written about all that sort of stuff before. And interestingly, as I was looking up the movie you're talking about, it was apparently directed by a young director named Brad Baron Renfro. And it says it was the last movie that he directed before his untimely death at the age of 25. So that's interesting. That's kind of a Kubrickian way to go, right? Finish a movie that exposes elite pedophilia only to die shortly after. It's very troubling. But apparently died at age 25 of heroin and morphine intoxication. So I don't know. But just seeing that the director, it was the last film before dying at 25, that's a little suspicious to me. So we'll look into that. Thank you. But yeah, Brett Easton Ellis definitely has firsthand knowledge of some of the stuff that goes on in these elite circles. So I'm not surprised that that movie reflects that. We'll go to one more call here. We've got Friendly Stug in North Dakota. Am I reading that right? I don't have my glasses on. Is it Stug or Slug? Stug, I think. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, Harrison, you have been on fire today. All three of the shows have been great today. So you've only plugged once today, so I'm going to help you out. I'm looking at my supplement shelf here, and I've got the Ultimate Life Force. I've got the turmeric gummies. I got the Survival Shield X2. I have the Methylene Blue and the Red. I've got the Colostrum Plus. I've got the Beef Tallow. I still take Beyond Tangy Tangerine. All the OG InfoWars listeners know what that is. And my favorite, by far, is the Optimal Human. I stopped taking greens powders, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, because they all taste like your garbage disposal smells. They're disgusting. They don't mix well. You drink it, and then you get these little powder pockets that pop in your mouth, and they taste disgusting. This, I can't wait till the summertime. I'm going to make a big pitcher of this, put some ice in it. It has electrolytes in it, and I'm just going to sip it all day.
It's so good, right? Do you do the lemon juice trick? I add a little lemon juice, and it really is good.
I haven't tried that. I think I will try that because it is, the flavor is hard to describe. It is kind of lemony, though. I think it would go well with lemon.
Well, it's like to me, it reminded me of like a green tea. So I was thinking like, okay, honey or lemon or something that you would put in a green tea.
Right. Yeah, no, it's good. It's my favorite product by far. I just read up on more of the turmeric gummies today. I also got some of the creatine, so I'm going to try that out. Also the electrolyte packets. I was going to get the energy shots. However, I looked at the ingredients, and it has 5-HTP in it. And a disclaimer for your audience, you cannot take 5-HTP in conjunction with methylene blue. Mm. It can cause serotonin syndrome. Very dangerous. You can get sweating, nausea, vomiting, heart palpitations, coma, and death. It's very serious.
Yeah, so that's true with a lot of things with methylene blue, and that's why we say like you actually should talk to your doctor because methylene blue is really powerful. But if you're taking any SSRIs, if you're taking any like Adderall or anything like that, you are not supposed to take methylene blue. It's just that powerful. So, man, thank you so much for supporting us. Thank you for reminding me to plug thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. 52% off site-wide right now. Thank you so much for the plug, Friendly Stug. That rhymes. Thealexjonesstore.com.
I see through a rose-colored darkly. That means I'm trying to tell you the truth, but I'm not always right just about 98% of the time. And bad guys of every stripe don't want this show on the air. But you're the good guys. You have to decide, hey, this guy's a fighter. This guy stood up for this. This guy has an incredible track record. We want to support him. And then I'm going to sell you something that really works so you love it and you get it again and again. And Bigly, our great sponsor, those at TheAlexJonesStore.com. No matter what happens, InfoWars, we continue on the Alex Jones Network that's been built. So key. Said, Alex, you keep getting it wrong. We don't have 84% reorder on Ultra Methylene Blue. We don't have 76% reorder on the supplements and average. You're reading that wrong. That's on total customers. We have a 97% reorder from anybody that orders at thealexjonesstore.com. Well, that's a testament to you guys out there supporting us and how great the products are. Nobody, I mean, a site that has a 20% reorder is seen as successful. That is you being steadfast supporters, and I want to thank you. So we're running the biggest sale of the year right now, over 50% off on Ultra Methylene Blue, on the Bovine Colostrum, on the new Methylene Red that's proprietary to us, on the Shilajit Complex, the Irish Sea Moss, Atomic Defense, and more. But it's only run until next Monday. Got 6 days to take action. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Takes money to fight a war. We're fighting a war. Plus, the products are great. So please, get yours now. Over 50% off, but it's an alert. Only a few days left. Thank you so much.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.